sometimes it just helps to have another opinion, a biblically grounded opinion. Welcome to Ask Pastor John, a short time of questions and answers with pastor and author John Piper. John, what are some of the key differences between living for the kingdom of Christ versus living for the American dream?
The essential difference is, what are you trying to make much of? Do you want to make much of Christ in the world, or do you want to make much of yourself or your business or your family? And what is your passion to see exalted, to see praised, to see enjoyed? And I want to put that central, because if we don't ask that question day by day, what am I going to make much of today? We will gravitate toward making much of the very things that everybody around us makes much of. We'll make much of our favorite sports team, or make much of our favorite food, or make much of our new computer program, or make much of a new breakthrough at work. And none of those things I just mentioned are sin, unless they become the thing that we're driven by. So I think right at the center, Bob, of answering that question is the difference between a kingdom mindset and a worldly mindset is the king. What place does the king have? Is he central in our affections? And is he then central in our vocabulary? Is he central in what we want to see happen at work and at church and in our leisure? So I think I'll just leave it at that, that the difference between people who are sold out to the kingdom and are given over to worldly pursuits, the difference is, what's the place of Jesus? What's the place of King Jesus in their affections and in their language and in their priorities in life?
John, you have often talked about a wartime lifestyle. Is that something that has always come easily for you personally?
No, and I don't think it comes easily for anybody. And if it starts coming easily, it may result in pride. On the other hand, that may not be the case, because sometimes the things we have to work hard at are the things we boast in. So pride is a very insidious and subtle thing. So when I say wartime lifestyle, I mean something very complex. I use that phrase instead of simple lifestyle because of the complexity of it. In wartime, you may need to build a B-52 bomber, which costs you millions and millions of dollars in order to win the war. Whereas in a simple lifestyle, of course, you wouldn't fiddle around with bombers. You'd just, you know, go out to Idaho and plant potatoes and be irrelevant. But in a wartime lifestyle, you're always thinking, how can my life count to advance the cause of Christ? And if it means buying a computer and staying in touch by email with your missionaries and giving them a verse every day and strengthening them and praying for them every day, you're going to invest several thousand dollars in a computer and some software. That's a wartime lifestyle. But you might not eat out as often, or you might buy a used car in order that you can do that computer. That's what I mean by wartime lifestyle. Whereas the alternative to wartime is just going with the flow. Everybody gets his toys, bigger house, bigger car, more clothing, more expensive places, more fine food, etc., without even thinking, how's the war effort advancing? So personally, I must battle every day against drifting, and it's not choices so much as drifting into becoming comfortable with things that probably are not essential for the war effort. And then you check yourself and you sit down with your wife and you say, now how are we doing with the spending of our money? And how are we doing with our purchases? And how are we doing with the use of our discretionary money for leisure? And I admit it's difficult, because I don't have any laws to lay down here as to what specific things you should be doing once a week or none, no times a week. It's just tough, which is why it's tough for me.
I know that you're aware of movements within the visible church which maintain that outward signs of material prosperity, up to and including a Rolls Royce or a Rolex, are a key testimony to the world of God's blessing in our life. There's quite a tension between that view and what you've said here. How do we resolve that?
We resolve it by rejecting it. It's just dead wrong. The world is not impressed by the prosperity of Christians. What the prosperity of Christians says to the world is nothing redemptive. Now, I'm not saying all prosperity is necessarily wrong here. Just making the point that the prosperity of a Christian, being able to move from a simple, let's just say, a trailer park, got your start by buying a $10,000 trailer, lived there with your wife for 5 years, worked hard, made some money, now bought your house, your little two-bedroom house in the inner ring suburb, and then 10 years later you buy your big outer ring house, and then you buy your cottage on the lake, and then you buy your boat, and then you buy your third car, and now you have made. What does that say to the world? Zero about Jesus Christ. Absolutely zero. It says to the world, they're just like us. They love the same things we love. They do the same things we do. This is a zero witness to the world. A person who's going to follow that track better find some other ways of testifying about Jesus, because their wealth, health, and prosperity is not saying anything redemptive to the world. So my way of resolving it, Bob, is to say it's wrong. You don't go that direction, and you don't believe in the prosperity as the evidence to the world that we belong to the King. It doesn't work that way. In fact, you look in the New Testament, and the things that bear the clearest witness are when you're willing to suffer for Christ. And that's so plain. A little child can understand that. Something is valuable to the degree that you're willing to suffer in order to have it, not to the degree that that thing gives you other things that you really like. So God is not shown to be valuable because he gives us other things that we like more than God. God is shown to be valuable when we're willing, for God's sake, to let certain things go that we wouldn't let go if he weren't so precious to us. So I think the testimony to the world works just the other way around. When Christians are willing to suffer for the cause of the unborn, suffer for the cause of racial justice, suffer for the cause of spreading the gospel, the world's going to say, just like it says in 1 Peter 3:15, where's your hope? And our answer is going to be, it's not going to be in houses and cars and lands. My hope is in the Lord Jesus Christ, who's going to take me to himself, to live as Christ, to die as gain. I'm here on earth to spread the gospel. I'm going to keep my life as simple and wartime as I can in order to maximize my effect for showing Jesus as valuable, not things as valuable.
The ultimate answer to the question of joy is knowing Jesus Christ. At Desiring God, we aim to help you know him and enjoy him like you never have before. Visit today and take advantage of the many free resources at our website designed to help you make Christ the treasure of your life. www.desiringgod.org. Desiringgod.org.